You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
With over 8,000 threat hunters analyzing over 65 trillion signals daily, Microsoft works tirelessly with the federal government to keep our nation's data secure. This 30-year-plus partnership is driving mission innovation that is secure by design. Whether optimizing your existing defenses or tackling advanced threats with AI, Microsoft gives you the intelligence and the automation you need to defend at mission scale. Let's work together to stay ahead of emerging threats and secure your mission anywhere. Learn more at aka.ms/fedcyber. That's aka.ms/fedcyber. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the CyberWire's Research Saturday. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is our weekly conversation with researchers and analysts tracking down threats and vulnerabilities and solving some of the hard problems of protecting ourselves in a rapidly evolving cyberspace. Thanks for joining us. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI.
We've seen an overall shift over the last few years from a focus on widespread consumer-focused attacks to much more targeted business or organizational-focused attacks.
That's Alan Liska. He's a senior analyst at Recorded Future and co-author of the book Ransomware. The research we're discussing today is titled Five Ransomware Trends to Watch in 2020.
With that, we've also seen a huge increase in ransom demands from a few hundred dollars to $100,000, $1 million, et cetera. So we're seeing a lot of six and seven figure ransom demands now. So that's kind of where we see the biggest trend. And then you add to that the ransomware actors, the more advanced ones, are figuring out other ways to monetize their attack. So that's where we start to see more of these extortion attacks where if you don't pay the ransom, then they're going to publish the files they've stolen from your network, and keep them up on a web page somewhere until you pay that extortion fee.
Mm. It's interesting to me that, I want to say a year ago or so, maybe a little longer than that, we thought we were going to see a shift to crypto mining and that ransomware was going to die down. That didn't play out.
No. So in 2017, we saw a huge dip in ransomware attacks. And then there's an acceleration of crypto mining attacks. And that continued to your timeline through a good part of 2018. It turns out it's really hard to make money crypto mining unless you're able to command literally hundreds of thousands and maybe even millions of devices to do the mining for you. It's actually really hard to make any kind of substantial money from crypto mining. Even as Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies were rising, it was just that much more difficult to actually do the calculations at scale.
What other trends are you tracking here when it comes to ransomware?
So we're seeing a big rise in ransomware as a service, which is really interesting because some of the top ransomware actors, so the the teams behind Revel, also known as Sotobinki, and Nemty, Megacortex, all rely on a ransomware as a service model. And of course, famously, before they were shut down, GandCrab relied on that model as well. What that does is it becomes a force multiplier for the threat actor. Instead of having to worry about a dozen threat actors, we now have to worry about hundreds of threat actors. Still only dozens of ransomware that are really a threat, but there are a lot more people behind them using a lot of different methods of activity, which means that it's harder to pinpoint where the entry point for the ransomware will be. So if you take Revel, for example, primarily what we used to see is they would be delivered through phishing emails, and we still see a lot of that. But some of the people that use their ransomware as a service will also gain access through a managed service provider, and then they'll jump from that managed service provider to target customers. We saw that in Texas, for example, last year with the 22 towns and cities that were infected from a managed service provider. We've also seen some of the Revel affiliates who are going after Citrix vulnerabilities or remote desktop protocol, et cetera, which means that again, that attack surface grows because there are so many different threat actors that are using that same ransomware.
Given where we stand today with ransomware, what are your recommendations for organizations to set up shop to be protected against it? In this environment, as things have evolved, how do you think folks should go about that?
Well, one of the things that you need to worry about, we've always advocated for good backups, right? Good backups and checking those backups and making sure that you have offline access to your backups, that they're not directly connected to the networks, because we know attackers, ransomware actors, like to go after those backups. But the other thing that you now have to worry about is you have to identify the attack as soon as possible. So before, what you'd have is, when I say before, I'm talking all the way back in 2016, 17, the ancient times. You'd have the ransomware actor who would gain access to a box, and then they'd infect that box, and then the attack would be over. With the more advanced ransomware actors that we're seeing a lot of activity from now, they're sitting in the network for a couple of weeks. They're learning the network, they're understanding it, and they're deploying the ransomware after they've studied the network, which means that early detection is much more important, because in addition to studying and learning the network, they're also stealing a bunch of data. So if you wait until the first system is encrypted to stop the ransomware attack, even if you effectively stop that, gigabytes, hundreds of gigabytes, if not terabytes of your data have already been stolen, and you're going to get an email from that actor in a few days saying, hey, you haven't paid the ransom. Just want you to know I've thrown your files up on this website, and I'm going to release them to everybody if you don't give me that extortion fee. Which is actually an interesting trend that we're seeing, that was one that I hadn't expected, where lawyers are now getting involved in the process. So the problem is, if you're going to throw a company's data up on a website, you can't necessarily do it on like an underground forum or a dark web where nobody can see it. You have to throw it up on a public website. Well, the moment you do that, you're now, in sort of the realm that companies are used to operating, where the ransomware actors aren't used to operating in that realm. So we saw this with the Maze ransomware, where they were one of the first to lead the extortion campaigns. They put all of the customer data up on a website hosted in Ireland, which obviously all of that ran afoul of GDPR. The website provider got sued by a company in Georgia whose data was exposed. And not only did the website get taken down, but the whole hosting company got shut down. So this is going to be an area where we may see more lawyers involved in this type of activity. as the courts get smarter about this. Another example in the UK where a company paid a ransom and the court stepped in and demanded that the exchange actually return the ransom money. They said, the court said it was illegal activity and the Bitcoin exchange had to actually give back some of the Bitcoin that hadn't already been taken off and laundered in other places. Which, again, this is a surprise to me, is we will see more court activity as the money gets, as the ransom demands get higher, as the extortion demands get higher, and these operators, these ransomware operators, act with more impunity, they're going to come up against, not just law enforcement, but legal enforcement.
Now, in terms of the ransomers getting a hold of my data, as you described, they're in my network and they're exfiltrating that data that they're then going to put on a public server somewhere. Is a possible solution to that for me, or a prevention for that, that I encrypt that data on my systems so that they can't get access to it, even though they're in my network?
Absolutely. I highly recommend it that any data sitting on a desktop or a server be encrypted wherever possible. Now, where that may be a problem is if the attacker has the credentials to that machine, then they may be able to unencrypt that. So it depends on how the encryption process works. But wherever possible, if you can encrypt that data while it's at rest, it makes it that much harder for the attackers to expose that.
That's Alan Liska from Recorded Future. The research we discussed was titled 5 Ransomware Trends to Watch in 2020. We'll have a link in the show notes. And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com. The CyberWire Research Saturday is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening.